Well, several events in the last few weeks are again raising questions about violence in hockey, both on and off the ice. Officials with two Ontario minor hockey teams downplayed an incident that the provincial police described as a brawl involving more than two dozen parents. And closer to home, 15 university players were recently suspended over a high-profile hockey brawl in Nova Scotia. Brad Yetman is head coach of the East Coast Blizzard Major Midget hockey team, and he's studying to become a sports mental performance consultant. Joins me live in the studio. Good morning, Brad.
Hey, Patty, good morning.
Obviously, these are two very different beasts, parents fighting outside the rink and a brawl on the ice. Let's start with the St. Ives Acadia brawl. First off, are you surprised the kind of national attention it's getting?
Well, yes and no. I mean, from looking at a hockey standpoint, the game has evolved so much that fighting has been somewhat eliminated, especially within the AUS circuit with the Atlantic University. So any type of event like this, and especially of the magnitude with so many players suspended so close to the end of the year, now that both teams are playing each other in the playoffs, that, you know, it would get some national coverage. And with social media nowadays too, and the more and more statements are being released by each team and each player and each witness, and it just gets blown up more and more.
It's interesting you mentioned social media, which really supercharged it. But I wonder, is it a double-edged sword, bringing focus on that type of violence to try to curb it or do away with it? Or will it just perpetuate the issue and we'll see more and more? Because now you'll see your name and your number and your fist flying on social media, on the national news. What do you think?
Well, you know what? It's a good question. It's something always to consider when you're within today's day and age, right? Like, it's you can't escape it almost. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like with any player that's really involved and someone who may have been considered or speculated to have started it, you know what? You got a target on your back now. And going into playoffs again, that player should be returning in playoffs, which is the most intense time of the year. And to say that player is not going to be target, you know, you never know. At the end of the day, the teams are trying to win, but it's just something you can't really control for.
You're a former high-level player. What do you think is going to become of fighting? It used to be just standard part of the game. There was a couple of guys in the room. That's why they were on the team. That person, that role player is sort of being pushed aside these days simply because of speed. What do you think is going to become of fighting, that type of violence?
Well, you know what? Fighting for me has always been something just to police the game. It's a very fast, high-paced game, and some guys take liberties. I'm of both mindsets now, that if you're still having hitting and checking and that kind of high pace action in that regards, which makes hockey in my mind, that you need that kind of fighting just to be able to kind of police the game. But on the opposite side, that if people are really going anti-violence, anti-fighting, then, I mean, you ultimately have to take checking out.
And you're someone who knows, unfortunately, all too well about brain trauma and concussions. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of focus on that these days, whether it be with football players, hockey players, and other contact sports. Let's move on to the parental side. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear a lot of chirps coming from parents in the stands, and they get a little bit carried away, maybe living vicariously through their child who's playing. But when they take it outside the rink in this brawl in Ontario, what do you have to say about that? What should we make of that?
Well, and you know, to go back to the original point about social media, that, you know, social media blows things back up again with that national coverage of these kind of events. But, you know, there's certainly no place for it. But I remember growing up in local rinks here, in which parents got into it before or after games, whether it would be my games or my brother's games or just even games watching. But, you know, it's certainly a bit of potentially an ego thing for parents. You know, if one plays more than the other, you know, if someone strikes the wrong chord, then it's already intensified within a hockey rink because, you know, parents are doing more of the yelling than kids are.
Do you think hockey gets unfair and undue attention? Because a lot of minor sports, when my boys played a variety of sports, hockey was no worse than anything else. Why do you think hockey gets the focus?
Well, I think it a lot has to do with the on-ice activity as well. People really peg hockey as, you know, that fast pace. You know, a lot of guys are getting hurt, you know, head trauma. I mean, you look at football, but, you know, I'm not much of a football person myself. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not as high-end here locally, of course, but, you know, within the atmosphere of a hockey rink, that it's almost like you're in this, like, closed-in, like, shelter. You know, you're going in, and it's almost like just animals. As soon as you go into the rink, and then as soon as you leave, you would expect, oh, yeah, like, everybody's just hunky-dory. But, you know, a lot of it spills over. So, you know, is it unjust? Yes, in a sense. But then also no, because, you know, it's just people get so worked up over it.
We get a lot of conflicting statements, whether it be the St. Ives Acadia brawl and the Ontario Minor Hockey Association's talking about it. What do you think has to happen here to, you know, put everything back on the rails and give it some semblance of this is normal stuff, or we'll do something to police it? Is this a national body's got to step in and do something? Because now this has really snowballed into something bigger than it probably is.
And you know what? If I had that answer and I had that kind of step-by-step as to how that could happen, I'm sure I would be getting phone calls off the hook as to say, you know, can you come on and help us out with that? Because, you know what? It's just one of those things that no matter how much you try to enforce and put in different guidelines, you know, whether it would be in a midget league, whether it would be in a house league, you know, as much as you try to put in different rules, kick people out of the rinks or anything like that, like people still find a way to be able to kind of maneuver themselves around different rules and different ways to be able to kind of get their voice heard or have an impact in one way or another.
Your mental preparation has become an enormous part of the sport, you know, whether it be to not get too high or get too low. Yeah. For you and your education as a sports mental performance consultant, what's your message even to the young players? And it doesn't just have to be hockey, because everyone, pressure comes with whatever you're doing, throwing a ball, swinging a bat, catching a football, or shooting a puck.
Well, you know what? The biggest thing is that you're never too early to kind of start with that stuff. The biggest thing that is in the news nowadays is how people are playing sports 365 days a year, playing single sports. I mean, it's nice to be able to get dual sports because you're able to learn different things. And, you know, that's just not physical aspects, you know, with hand-eye coordination or just using different muscles or anything like that, but with mental aspects as well, because routines are going to be different for hockey versus soccer. You know, being able to pick up different little things about that. And for mental skills, for me, a big thing that I constantly try to push is that a lot of athletes nowadays, especially younger athletes, have difficulty managing emotions, but they consider mental skills just to be another tool in the toolbox. Whereas in reality, you know, like you could have this, you know, hockey player, for instance, seeing how that's what we've been talking about, that, you know, big, can skate, you know, can shoot, can pass, can do all those little things right, but they just consider mental skills to be another tool. Whereas for me, I like to tell young athletes that mental skills is the toolbox. That if you don't have that toolbox, you can't carry those tools. So, I mean, if you don't have those mental skills or that mental strength, then it's more often than not that you're not able to make that jump to the next level just because you don't have those skills necessary.
And what I like to always say is that those types of skills or techniques, they are easily transferable to your non-sports activities, to how you conduct yourself in school and with your friends and amongst your family. So there's a lot to that. Brad, really good to see you. Good luck with your studies and good luck to the team this year.
Yes, thanks very much. We're first round of playoffs now, split last weekend, both series in the Major Midget League here locally, so it's great hockey, so looking forward to the rest.
No excuse for your boys not to have a good mental sharpness.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Here you go, Brad Yedman. He's the head coach of the East Coast Blizzard Major Midget Hockey Team and studying to be a sports mental performance consultant, not just for sports, it's for life.